There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
The NFL trade deadline.
Huh?
Okay, we're nearing the trade deadline. Yeah. Same day as the election.
It's a hoax.
The presidential election.
Did you not realize that before?
I don't know why you can't move one or the other.
A lot of things happened.
I think that's
they
really...
should move that election to accommodate the NFL trade deadline.
But we have to get our sports back.
I don't know why they aren't moving the trade deadlines.
Weird.
They are stupid.
No, it's... move the election.
No, no, the other way around.
What's more important?
We do a little trolling. It's called we do a little trolling.
Now you have your priorities kind of rearranged.
What if Max Crosby was traded for? Wouldn't that be more important?
Bears fans, it's me and Edit in a different jersey, and I'm like, what the f*** is this turned into?
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Make the Bears great again.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's Tuesday, November 5th, and that means trade deadline.
That's
3 o'clock today.
That's what it means, Mully. Good morning. Happy Tuesday. It also means get out and vote. It's election day.
Now, honestly, when did you vote?
I voted a week and a half ago.
Okay.
I waited an hour and a half like a lot of people waited. Okay. And I'm done.
Yeah, I voted last week. I mean, to me, the whole thing ended last week. The minute I voted, you could just call it off.
Just kind of put your head in the sand and let everything happen.
What a relief.
Pay no attention. Yes.
What a relief.
You did your civic duty. Did you get your little sticker?
More of it. I got my sticker.
I like my sticker.
Yeah,
I didn't like take a picture and post it and be proud and show off. I voted. But I do think that everybody should take advantage today. Weather's not great. At least it's not cold.
Not it's wet here.
It's wet, but not chilly.
Not cold.
I'm surprised you are for our Twitch audience. I'm surprised you are in your stylish Flag and Anthem fall jacket. It's not necessarily that cold, but I do like the look.
I am battling a little bit of a head cold.
Okay.
And I haven't talked much about it. And
I don't want to bring it up.
I move on in life. I have, David... I have a cough drop that I found in my bag that is probably, roughly 4 or 5 years old.
What's the expiration date on these
things? I don't know, but I'm going to find out later.
Let me know. I don't think
those
expire.
I only have the one, which is kind of a drag.
Well, but check your other pocket.
No, that was in my, this is a brand new coat.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe it's your pant pocket or something like that.
No, it's my backpack.
Nonetheless, go ahead and take your cough drop. We're fine.
I will take it later. And I'm waiting until
it's a big day. It's going to be a rainy day, but it is a big day both in the NFL and around America.
Yeah, there's other stuff.
Not necessarily
going on.
In that order, but depending on your perspective.
Ramblers, a big win.
Did you see that?
I did watch.
How about that? College basketball back. A little early to put everything into the blender. I just don't know yet. But there was a big night of college basketball.
It's difficult.
Men's and women's.
Well, you know what? I mean, here's the thing. Among the many spectacular things that are going on in the world, tonight is the first release from the College Football Selection Committee, Playoff Selection Committee. So we'll get their version of who's in and who's out. And listen, it obviously is just a starting point, but I am fascinated by the idea of what do they do with all the big conference schools with multiple losses versus like the SMUs of the world or schools that are up and coming that have a good record, but they're not playing everybody every week.
I am drawn to the conversation and to what comes out of tonight for the reasons that you kind of alluded to. Not necessarily I don't necessarily care about how many SEC schools get in right now. What I'm intrigued by are the Indianas, the SMUs, the Pitts, the teams that I never expected in August to be doing what they're doing. And you look, oh my goodness, could this be a misprint? Is it basketball season? Indiana is ranked 8th in the country. Are you kidding me?
Well,
are you kidding me?
I mean, they've got one game, really.
I know.
And it's a marquee game.
But they're in, right? Ohio State.
Right now they would be.
One loss?
But this is what I'm asking. So, for instance, on Saturday, I believe it's a 3 o'clock game, you have Alabama at LSU. So both Alabama and LSU have two losses right now.
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to handle two lost teams? Because the big question is, what are they going to do with the three lost teams?
Get out.
Okay.
Get out.
That means that this is an elimination game on Saturday.
It is.
I think that's unbelievable.
And I think that creates what people were afraid of, the opposite of what people were afraid of. The regular season matters. The regular season does matter because of who gets in and what it does to Saturdays like this one. Now, I know it's early November, but you can go back as far as the first couple weeks of the season and point to games that had significance. I think that this college football season has been tremendous in terms of the drama, in terms of the uncertainty. I don't like a lot of things about the NIL. I think they need to regulate it. I think there are a lot of things and flaws within the system that are inherent with doing what they did, but the overall product to me is as good as ever.
So you have one loss Georgia, right? They lost to Alabama. They're heading to two loss Ole Miss. And you're telling me Georgia wins the game and Ole Miss eliminated.
Get out.
Okay. I mean, I find that fascinating.
Because I think there's too many other good teams having good years.
But then you can't set up all this big all these SEC teams to be knocked out of your playoff. I just think it's
really
interesting.
It depends on what you're looking for. I almost think you have a better regional representation if you are that discriminating in terms of against teams with three losses. Now, because objectively, I'm not a dummy. I think that if contrary to some...
Objectively, I'm not a dummy. That's got to be... Let's bring that clip back.
Okay. When you watch the tape, or we're watching snippets of games. Sometimes we're watching full games. I can't tell you that if Ole Miss played Indiana that I would pick Indiana to beat Ole Miss.
Yeah.
And I think that you could pick four or five teams in the SEC that I'm not sure that the Hoosiers could beat or Pitt could beat or SMU could beat. But I struggle with that because I think that you earn things on the field. And I think that all you can do if you're Indiana, Pitt, or SMU, teams like that, is win the games in front of you and play your schedule. And if you do that to the best of your ability and don't stumble, I think you deserve something more than a team that's lost three times.
I am not arguing it, but I think, like, for instance, Penn State just lost to Ohio State. Penn State has one signature win. You know what it is? Illinois. Illinois just lost to Minnesota.
I know.
I'm just saying.
The domino effect.
So how good are you if you only have one loss, but it's not, and it's to a good team, but you don't have a lot of big wins?
It's,
how do you determine that?
It's really the fun part of sports.
Right. Because I find it
harmless debate. I find it really good conversation because you could make a football argument that several teams in the SEC with more than one loss
exactly.
are better than Penn State that had a bad loss to Ohio State, and their quality win was over Illinois.
Yeah.
You're right.
It's just a hard thing to figure out. And that's all I'm saying is I find that the first look at what their thinking is should reveal a lot of that kind of thing.
I do. I think you're right.
That's why I think we all know who the number one team in the country is, and we know who should be rated highly. But I just want to know how they're going to handle all this stuff initially set up their decisions later.
One minor quibble.
Please.
Why tonight? Don't we have enough?
I think it's the trade deadline. We're
overloaded with information. Yeah, the brain is really crowded right now.
Yeah, it might be hard to turn that on when other things are going on in my household.
So what does David Axelrod think about the Indiana Hoosiers and getting – and oh, wait, not him. What is – okay. Lester Holt, tell me what you think about Ohio State.
I think David Axelrod, to answer your question, is a huge college hoop fan. Did you know that?
Yeah.
I had a conversation with him.
Yes, I do.
Where he was at the University of Chicago. He told me this. He was at the University of Chicago in college, and he hitchhiked down to see UCLA had come up to play. It might have been Notre Dame.
I remember this story.
It was awesome.
I do remember this story.
I mean, the guy like wanted to see Bill Walton or
I think
Kareem
he's still a Bulls season ticket holder.
Yeah, he's a big hoop.
Former
fan.
Chicago Tribune political writer.
Yeah.
And certainly he paid attention to the Bulls last night. I think we all had to. Not much defense there. They lose at home just when you think that you understand what's going on with the Bulls. They lose to the only winless team left in the league.
It was hard to believe.
And it was hard to watch.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Terrible defense. Without Zach LaVine.
Yeah.
Now he's got a strained adductor, which is...
Yeah, that's not good.
You don't want that to linger.
No.
Could be a while. I don't think it would be a while, but it's game to game. They did the right thing, I suppose.
Well, it's all about injury management in the modern NBA.
I think and as far as the Bulls go, I don't know what it's all about game to game.
Yeah, it's a very difficult one.
It is a hard thing to figure out.
You know what's really amusing, though, and I don't know why this tickles my funny bone, the idea that Matas Buzelas – went down to the G League, played in a scrimmage against the Iowa Wolves. I didn't even know they existed, and then was called back, and he was there last night. I just think that is so funny to me that you had a G League stint of a day.
It helps to have your G League in your backyard,
which
is the only thing you have to battle is traffic, not airport security or anything like that. I don't know if he's going to be playing in more Bulls games this year or G League games this year.
I think he understands it's about development. He's
he seems unfazed.
He had a great conversation.
Yeah, fine.
Yeah.
Did you see the interview with him at the United States? He was like swaying.
Yeah. KC was making fun of it.
Back and forth. And like, okay.
Jerry Angelo used to do that.
Stand still.
Yeah.
But I think his development remains a priority, and wherever it comes, it comes. I think I'd like to see him in the rotation with the Bulls, but I also don't know how he fits or who he replaces right now.
Yeah. How good was he against the Iowa Wolves?
I can't say that I watched that game.
Who's your favorite Iowa Wolves player?
I didn't know that was the nickname. Yeah. Do they have Wolves in Iowa?
I don't know.
I mean,
they got Sharks there today. There's an election going on.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Yeah.
So the Bulls, they were bad last night. We'll talk about that. I was also drawn to the Monday night football game because I thought for a while Tampa Bay was going to pull it off.
Yeah.
We got to at least address this at some point. The NFL does so many things right, and they make us watch. We're addicted to football.
No doubt.
The overtime rule is still a source of much consternation.
Yeah, they never.
It bothers me.
Tampa never touched the ball.
Never. How do you still have that rule?
Yeah, I don't know because I thought they changed that. But we had a call about it yesterday, and you got your answer today. Tampa had a chance to go for two at the end of the game.
That's a different topic, but I think you're right.
It's connected, isn't it?
Yeah, well, okay. Because
they never touched the ball again.
They should have gone for two.
That's right.
And even if they would have touched the ball again, they should have gone for two.
Probably.
Okay, so you're Todd Bowles. You're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You're in Kansas City.
Yes, you are.
You score with 26 seconds left.
Yeah. And you got one play.
You're against the world champions in their building. You want to give the ball back to Patrick Mahomes in overtime? You're not going to see it again.
He might have been hurt.
You're going to lose a coin flip.
But well, he wasn't hurt.
And you risk losing a coin flip. What are the chances? What did you have a better chance of doing? Scoring the two-point conversion or winning the coin flip?
The numbers, I believe, were like 51-49 to kick. So, believe it or not, he followed the closer path to victory, even though it didn't.
Thank you, Johnny Analytics. What does your gut say?
I'm not arguing with you. I would have gone for it.
What does your gut say?
I agree with your logic.
You're staring Baker Mayfield in the eye during a timeout on the sideline. What do you think you're feeling in that moment? Oh, 51% of the time we should kick. No, you're like, let's win this game.
Well, let's see. This guy tried to put a flag into AstroTurf. We're just going to kick it.
I still don't like that.
I think but that was one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
He's a really good NFL quarterback
right now.
He is. He moved them down the field. He doesn't have Godwin. He doesn't have Mike Evans.
Incredible.
He's got receivers. He's making better. He's elevating their game.
He's doing well.
So you get down there, you score a touchdown. Don't you want to finish the job? Don't you want to just like
listen?
Come on, man.
You nearly pulled one of those scanners head blow up things. All I said was the analytics slightly, ever so slightly, favor what he did.
Okay.
And I agree with you that you don't need to look at the analytics. You need to look at the team on the other sideline and the fact that. You know, do you ever bet against Mahomes, especially late?
No.
I mean, there's a lot of people walking around broke because they tried to play against him in the last couple Super Bowls.
And he almost was injured and out indefinitely.
It looked like he was not coming back. Right.
There was a pall cast over Arrowhead Stadium, and he limped into the injury tent, and then he came jogging out.
Was Taylor Swift there? I think she was. Yeah.
I think she was.
She has an extraordinary record as a Kansas City fan. They need her.
What was her role last night?
Keeping
Jason Kelce away from the kids?
No. Oh, God. Wow. Yeah.
Dustin's got bitter beer face.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's pretty funny, though. Yeah.
He apologized.
Oh, yeah. It was a good apology.
They opened up Monday Night Countdown with that.
It was a good apology. As far as those kind of apologies go, I think that he made a nice apology.
Speaking of Tuesday, November 5th, and all the things going on, we have determined that there is the college football playoff selection committee showing us what they have.
Yep.
There is the NFL trade deadline.
Check.
There is a national election.
Check.
And there is also, chirp, chirp, your Ball State.
I can't believe you included that.
I had to.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Come on.
What are they doing Maction on election night? I mean, they're having fun in Muncie tonight. Big game in terms of a rivalry game. They're playing the Redhawks of
Miami of Ohio. Yeah.
And
cradle of coaches.
They need this game. It is a cradle of coaches.
I know it is.
I don't know if it's going to be a good outcome for the alma mater, but I do think it will be a fun one, and it will give me a nice thing to flip over to in the middle of all of the election coverage.
Stuff. See, this is what I'm saying.
I know.
You're complaining about all these things, but you know and I know where your attention will be.
I do. I love Maction.
This is Maction!
I love the concept. Tuesday and Wednesday nights in November are meant for Mac football. And you know who else is going to be watching? Flusy.
Of course.
I got to tell you this. So the other day, over the weekend, I'm in my basement. I'm getting some stuff. Going through some stuff. And I see a VHS tape.
Of you versus Flusy?
of Ball State versus Toledo from my junior season. And I'm looking for a place that converts VHS tapes to digital. Because who has a VHS player now?
Look at Rick. Dustin has one.
You do? Can you still? Does it still work?
I still have one. It still works.
Does it still work?
Yeah.
You can put in a.
Do you still watch it?
You know, with all the technology now, the reason I had kept it around for as long as I did, in all honesty, is because we have like as a family, we have a collection of like every Disney. I'm sure you did it one time,
yes.
Molly. Every VHS of every Disney movie.
Oh my gosh!
So like we have this huge trunk, and so every once in a while, but now with Disney Plus, like all that stuff is out, so you don't necessarily need it, but it's still worthwhile.
Okay.
And I've got one of those combo units, those DVD, VHS. Now, it's not hooked up. Like, it's in the garage, but it works.
Do you have a Betamax unit, too?
I don't. No Betamax.
That's going way back.
What were those videos that were like LPs? Remember those? Like,
oh, wow.
Like
that
before
didn't
a
last
DVD?
Long. Yeah, that didn't.
That didn't.
Yeah.
That was after a VHS, but it was like the video was
those.
Like the size of an album.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No,
don't remember those.
I still have a record player. I mean, I still have a.
Well, my daughter actually asked for one last year, and then she wanted all the Taylor Swift vinyls she could get a hold of.
Wow,
that's smart. That's smart. Well, I'm gonna try to find somewhere to convert it, and I'll see if I can spot Flusie.
You can
on
do
the field.
That.
You want to borrow it? You want me to bring it in? You could.
I don't know how to hook it up to my TV.
No, you can go to a place and they'll convert it for you.
I'm gonna do that.
And they'll give you a DVD.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I'll try to do that.
I've done that with
Rich Wyatt. Rich Wyatt probably can convert it. Okay, he's MacGyver.
Okay.
He can do anything.
I'll bring it in.
He's MacGyver.
So anyway, that's why I'm interested in Maction. Ball State, though, 12.5-point underdogs.
Yeah, I know.
Could be a long night.
Yeah, Miami of Ohio is pretty good.
Yeah,
Miami.
I'll take that one.
Oh, boy. Speaking of Flusie.
Whoa, boy. We had to get to him eventually, right?
Yeah. Tough day at the office. Another one. Another tough day. Shane Waldron will remain the play caller for the Bears.
Surprising?
Not really.
I thought a lot about what Olin said when we talked to him, and he kept. He said that's the third play caller. If indeed he goes away from yet another offensive coordinator, he's on to his third in as many years. I don't know how that one looks at the end of the year.
Well, I think it's a good conversation, and I think it's an excellent point. I wonder now, since he has reinvested whatever hope or confidence in Shane Waldron, number one, is it indefinitely? Is it the rest of the season? Is it week to week? And secondly, which is more likely to happen this year than changing offensive play callers or defensive play callers? Because if he changes defensive play callers, even though he is an elite defensive play caller, as we have referred to him at times, would relinquishing that duty make him a better head coach?
That's a good question. You know, it's another good question. What are you allowed? Two head coaches as a general manager or three offensive coordinators as a head coach?
I think you're allowed three offensive coordinators as a head coach only if one of those was hired somewhere else as a head coach. And I don't think you're allowed to hire three because your first two were failures.
Well, that's what you're getting at.
And I think when you are in that situation, it's more likely to anticipate Ryan Poles, the general manager, getting a second hire as a head coach.
I think he will.
Than it is Matt Eberflus getting a third offensive coordinator to ruin a quarterback. I mean, to work for him.
Oh, boy. That is so, you know, because I mean, we're not joking about it as much as we joke about it, tongue firmly in cheek.
Uh-huh.
The very fact is there are as many quarterbacks ruined in the NFL as developed. Just look at the Bears.
By the way, just for the record, I was being facetious there.
Oh, okay. I picked up on it.
I just want to make sure. I want to make sure everyone's
not,
clear here.
Believe
I'm
it or not,
a dummy.
I got a little bit of a radar in that stuff.
Okay, I know. Okay.
Yeah, are you an idiot, David?
No. Okay. I'm not a dummy.
Oh, okay. Thanks. I'm glad we. That is so classic.
Okay.
Objectively.
Now I'm mad at Brandon.
He's a dangerous character.
He's dangerous.
You just can't misspeak around.
Fun with Sound with Brandon Fryer.
I accidentally said something the other day, just standing next to him, and it came back on the air. I'm like, how the hell did that? Are you bugged?
We'll also get to the DJ Moore stuff.
He smiled and said, no, you are.
We will address during the pick six the DJ Moore stuff that bubbled up yesterday.
Yes.
Both on our show and then later on social media with some a video clip which needs some explanation.
Yeah.
There's a lot to go over today.
There is a lot. And we're going to get to all of it. The pick six is next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Yeah.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Any surprise that Matt Eberflus is sticking with the OC Shane Waldron as his play caller? Did you think about what Olin Krutz said yesterday about the danger of going to a third play caller? Do you believe that issue influenced Eberflus's decision?
No, I think that that's, I mean, not the third play caller thing. I don't think he's worried about that. I think that he probably feels that there's a reason they hired this guy and that the guy can do the job, honestly. And even if there's evidence against that, I think that's how he probably feels about it. He said that, you know, it was pretty interesting. He talked about when he was asked about whether he feels pressure in his job, and he talked about how the league is week to week. The league is week to week, man. I mean, you look at people and how they do, how their team does, and Your feelings on them, the public reaction, it changes all the time over the course of a season. So I think he feels that it's too early. It's too early in their season with all the difficult games they have ahead of them to go with a different play caller. There's a reason they hired the guy. They talked about his versatility. I don't know that taking that away from him and giving it to someone who wasn't hired to do it, wasn't in a position to do it, even if they've done it before, didn't do it so magnificently they were hired again to do it. See what I'm saying? So you hired this guy for a reason, and you got to kind of believe in that. And maybe you've got to get more involved as the head coach. Maybe you've got to give up your play calling, as we talked about earlier, in order to focus in on all the things that you want to see in order to play whatever brand of complimentary football you envision the Bears playing. And by the way, that's the one thing that has been a positive with Caleb Williams is he doesn't give the ball away. He has not thrown picks. You know, you look at different – there's nothing wrong with throwing a pick, as Peyton Manning once said every interception has its own story, but you shouldn't go out with the idea of doing that. And so he's been protecting the ball, which will give this team a chance, and that's a good sign. But there's not much more. I don't know. I worry about the development of the quarterback. I really do, and I think that's the problem. Is Shane Waldron is responsible for that in his play calling, and that's a problem right now.
There was a group text between the head coach, the offensive coordinator, and the general manager, Trace Armstrong, sent it after the game as they were flying back on Air McCaskey and said, there'll be no changes. There will be no changes. We're going to stick together as a group. This three-headed monster that I've created in Chicago will all stick together. But in all seriousness, this would be if you
don't
were
report
to,
that because people will believe you. I know you're being facetious.
I am kidding.
Was that before or after the email from Eberflus to Shane Waldron not to throw the ball to Cole Kmet?
Right. You guys, that's a whole other story that we should like pull the curtain back a little bit because like we were saying stuff on the air yesterday that never made it to the air and about a phone call that got cut off before the guy made the.
Oh, we were saying it off the air. Yeah, I'm catching.
Right, but anyway, so. This would be, if you were to demote Shane Waldron or to fire Shane Waldron, this would be equivalent in my mind like what I hate in baseball, where you fire the manager and then you elevate the bench coach. Oh, wait a minute. So the bench coach is sitting there with all the answers on how to fix everything. Usually the bench coach is a buddy of the manager. That's his playing cards, going out, spending the per diem, hanging out on the road guy, right? So the offensive room, if you get rid of Waldron, the other three guys that are there, the run game coordinator, the pass game coordinator, the quarterback, they have all the answers. They've been keeping that from Shane. So there's not what about collaboration?
Right.
It's a big collaboration at Halas Hall. So that's why this doesn't make any sense. Unless you do what the Raiders did, which was you got rid of the offensive line coach, the quarterback's coach, as well as Getsy.
See,
in one
I understand what you're saying, and that's true. I don't like those kind of moves in season with mass firings after a half of a season has gone by. And I don't like using one knee-jerk reaction to justify or defend another. And that's what essentially people who have seen enough of Shane Waldron would be asking for. Fire him! He's worthless. I get why you'd think that after the last couple weeks, and frankly, I think he's had two games which he's committed unforgivable, unacceptable play calls, offensive football sins, if you will. But I don't think Matt Eberflus looks at it that way, and I think what we heard yesterday and what we continue to hear is a difference in the way that coaches view a 4-4 start and everyone outside the building views a 4-4 start. Maybe it's because of expectations. Maybe it's because of the same agent, maybe it's because of alliances. We just don't know. But Matt Eberflus is going to be much slower to want to change for a lot of reasons. A lot of reasons. Maybe this is the way he looks at life or football than we are to be when we're clamoring for change. I don't think that Shane Waldron necessarily needs to get lost. He needs to get better. He needs to get smarter. And I think he needs to make sure that he's using those resources at his disposal. Chris Morgan, the run game coordinator, and Thomas Brown, the passing game coordinator, and doing whatever he can with Kerry Joseph to focus in what is best for Caleb Williams. You know what I would do? I would bring Caleb Williams into the mix more and ask him what does he like to do and why, and how can you help us frame the first 15 or the game plans? We want to run plays that you like to run and are comfortable executing. And that would be the nice pivot. So I don't know if Flusie's looking at this necessarily about his own coaching mortality yet, but I do think it his alliance with Shane Waldron speaks to how loyal I think he's going to be.
Oh, boy, good question.
That's the voice of Coach Dave Wanstead. He will be in here at 7:40 to 8:20. Talking Bears, talking NFL, talking Big Ten college football. Did you see the video circulating on social media of our guy, DJ Moore, running off the field during the play as Caleb Williams continued to scramble? Should DJ be held accountable as Tyreek Stevenson was for not being part of the play?
I don't think this is a Tyreek Stevenson turn my back and taunt the fans and take myself out of the equation for 4 seconds. I do think that it's not a great look and probably bears some explanation from DJ Moore. I do also think that this is making the rounds around the football community on social media. You see him limping and you do wonder fairly if he was injured on that play and wanted to gimp off the field, even though he came back onto the field for the next play. I do wonder if he was aware or kept running because he stepped out of bounds and knew that once you do that, you can't be part of the action. You're basically dead to your quarterback. I also wonder, he must have assumed that Caleb Williams was done scrambling because it did appear like he was going to be tackled. Those sound like excuses for DJ Moore. I do think he deserves a benefit of the doubt because he's been a professional. And yes, he is, full disclosure, as everybody knows, on our show every Monday morning at 8 o'clock, as he was yesterday, creating a little bit of a stir with his comments about Matt Eberflus as well. But I want to hear from DJ Moore on this. I want to hear him answer questions, which he likely will do tomorrow about it. We've reached out to him to see if he wants to address it. If he does, he will. But I don't think this is a Tyrique Stevenson situation because I just don't think that he has the same track record. He has earned the benefit of the doubt in a way other pros haven't.
The apples and oranges to me as far as Tyrique Stevenson and DJ Moore. But it did cause enough of a stir. There were quite a few text messages that I was receiving that I went back to the DVR and got to that specific. I mean, this is the first quarter of the game, folks. If you did DVR it and haven't erased it yet, and I don't blame you for erasing it if you did, but it looks like, first of all, it looks like Caleb Williams is going to step out of bounds on the play. And if you, in the camera catches DJ going off and limping, he's hopping on one leg, and it looks like when you lose sight of him, at least on my TV, it looks like he was about to sit down on the bench because he was dealing with something. Charlie horse, a cramp. I'm not quite sure. Now, he did come back out on the very next play. This is also the play that we had the offensive pass interference that was a nuisance on Allen. And now maybe he saw that flag and thought the play was over. Maybe I'm not sure. We don't know. And he will have to address it. He's been asked to address it. If he chooses to, he'll call in this morning. But I think this is very different. But I understand it's not a great look. It's not a great look.
So when a player leaves the field, and this is the thing that Eberflus said, the official threw his hat down. That means he's not eligible to be back on the field. Dead. So what you have to do is you have to get back on the field and reestablish yourself. And then you are allowed back in the play. There are a lot of teams that will tell, and a lot of coaches that will tell a player, either go to the ground or go sit on the bench. Because once you go back on the field, before you establish yourself, the quarterback may throw the ball. You may muddle up the play. And I'm not saying that's what happened here. I'm just saying that is the backstory to how things work in the NFL when you do leave the field. And I think you're probably right, Dustin. He probably something. He had a cramp or whatever it was, and he's kind of hopping off the field. And, okay, so they're down a man on the play, but the play, the quarterback had already – he had already kind of rolled and then turned and rolled back. So I think if DJ had come back on the field, that may have just muddled up the vision the quarterback has of what's going on. So I think there's a lot to get to. I was surprised that Eberflus couldn't just answer that question, to be honest with you. Why couldn't he just say something like that?
I'm not sure that it was had people were aware of it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they had made the rounds. Okay. It was probably mid-afternoon and after he spoke.
All right. Just not,
yeah, he was not, not as far as deal. I know, he was not asked about it.
I don't think it's a big deal at all, frankly. But we'll find out.
It's such a multi-layered question.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. Biggs time, 7 a.m. this morning. What did you make of Jalen Johnson telling the afternoon show he has no issue with any of his teammates speaking their mind?
Nobody was gossiping or talking behind nobody's back. At the end of the day, I don't think anybody aired anybody out or said something that could have been kept between the locker room. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, our locker rooms are locker rooms. So, I mean, we're very much so vocal. We are very much so transparent with each other, the coaches, the player, the coach. I mean, it's a very vocal and transparent group, locker room, facility.
Are you okay with what you just heard there again from Jalen Johnson on our afternoon show?
You know, I love that guy, and he's such a great guest with those guys. It's tons of fun. It's appointment radio. You know, I think that it was the second guessing of the coaches that looked so bad last week. It wasn't players ripping on other players. No one came out and really went after other players. And I think they all get along. But it was, that you just can't, if you're in charge, you can't have everybody questioning everything you do. You got to have a little buy-in from the group. So I felt that Matt Eberflus lost a lot of ground last week, and I felt the coaching staff lost a lot of ground last week. I didn't think they handled it particularly well. I think if he had come out and spoken after the Washington game and on Monday after the Washington game, the same way he did at halftime of this game, even if I didn't buy into the fact that everything was his fault, but had he been like that after the first game, I don't think you'd have heard any of that stuff. So it would appear he's learned something, but he also did tell the captains, like, knock it off, and,
yes,
and he doesn't want to see it. So, I mean, it's not about you and your teammates. It's about the other people and the coaches and the people on the staff and the feeling that there was no respect.
Well, I think the key is that nothing, according to Jalen Johnson, nothing, at least from him, that he said here or at the podium or on social media was nothing that he didn't tell Flus. I almost have a bigger issue, you know, just being older than these players obviously are. Like, I would have never called my coach by their nickname if I was interviewed about my coach. I wouldn't have called, you know, Gronk, you know, like short for Growwinkle. You know, like, I wouldn't have called my coach from high school like a shorter name. Like, that would have been like the worst thing I could have ever done. Forget about a 15-yard penalty. Calling him by a nickname instead of his full name if I was ever asked by, you know, the Elmhurst Press about that or some craziness. But I'm just saying, the fact that they're calling the guy by his nickname, to me, is almost more disrespectful.
I think it almost speaks to the kind of camaraderie, though, he wants and invites. And as a defensive...
Who wants it? Eberflus?
Matt Eberflus. Yeah. Flusy.
Okay.
Or Flusy. Flusy.
Yeah, I can't verify this. I think he's changed the E in front of the house to an F.
Because we'll have to check that out.
I think that's just grade.
It depends. How can he get that work done during the season? That's be tough. I think it speaks to how they have connected last year, maybe, and feel a connection, like more of an assistant coach or position coach than a head coach. It's a fine line to walk when you appreciate candor and you want players to feel empowered. And yet when you have a week like last week where there were players openly, publicly questioning the authority in the building, they weren't questioning each other. There wasn't offense versus defense. It was players versus coaching staff.
Yeah.
And that can be galvanizing for a team in some ways. It could be us against him or them as a staff. And so I don't think that's a problem. At the same time, you've now lost two games in a row. And from our perspective, I don't want to be a hypocrite in saying things that we don't appreciate some of these sound bites because it gives great reason to talk about them, and it's really compelling stuff. But I do feel from a football perspective, when I'm looking at this in that vein, with that hat on, I'm like, okay, this is the week the Bears need to shut up and play. And I think this is the week they need to stop talking about what they're talking about and stop really analyzing everything so openly and publicly and, you know, go to practice, put your hand in the dirt and learn how to play physical football again because they look soft and they're playing a team accused of being soft. And this is the week that they need to remind us that they're not soft. So you know how you do that? Not with your words, with your actions. So Jalen Johnson is right, but I think this week I hope the conversation shifts toward being a good football team again and what that takes.
See, I just want to ask players, what was the worst call in that Washington game?
Molly, I got a question for you and Hawk.
That's the voice of Jared Payton. He is here with you guys at 9. And don't forget, on Sunday, the pregame show will be out at Jared's place in St. Charles.
As will you.
On the Fox.
Say it. You got to be included in that.
I will be there as well. I've confirmed that with our guy Patrick from Gage Park. He will be there as well.
And you'll be signing autographs and you'll be taking photos.
Kissing babies and taking photos.
There we go.
Yes.
And talking to the Elmhurst Press.
I'm talking to the Elmhurst Press, yes.
I thought he stopped talking to them.
I think it might be the Independent now.
What's bad about this coach? I'm talking to
him. No, it's the Jimmy
I'll give
G.
Him my, yes, it was.
I'll give him my thoughts on the Park District referendum that I voted for yesterday. Why or why not I did or didn't vote, I won't reveal my vote. But I did vote. I've got my sticker on.
Yeah,
prove
look
it.
At you.
Oh, sure you do.
So
do,
all four
right
of us have voted.
Yes.
So all we really care
right
about.
Right here, buddy.
Is the
I voted.
Sticker.
Kiss me, I voted. It's right there on my flag and anthem vest.
I'm not kissing you, man.
All right, back to the question. What did you think of the Bulls game against the Jazz? And how concerned are you about the illness to Josh Giddey, injuries, plural, to Zach LaVine.
Well, Josh Giddey played through it. He was kind of listed as questionable, and they talked about it after the game or before the game. They wondered. Zach concerns me a little bit because this is the second injury, and we're just a month into the season, really. First month of the season, two injuries. He's missed some time. It is the modern NBA, so you didn't expect him to play. They didn't play with Lauri Markkanen because of back spasms, and it didn't matter. I did not expect the Bulls to lose to the winless Jazz.
Yeah.
I did not expect them to lose last Friday to the lowly, hapless Nets. They are in a two-game losing streak. I don't know what to expect. I want to either take a course or teach a course and hired Casey Johnson to teach it. How to interpret and understand this year's Bulls team. I don't know what their mission is. I don't know what to expect from them. I don't know what they're doing on a nightly basis. They don't play defense. They shoot the three. I want to call it Billy Ball, but then I learned Billy doesn't want to call it Billy Ball. This is the most confusing team in recent memory.
Yeah, how about that? He doesn't like the Billy Ball stuff. That's surprise. I mean, it took him 3 or 4 years to figure out that they should shoot more three-pointers. And then the guy who was also not playing last night was a guy who could shoot three-pointers, a 7-footer from Euro that could shoot a three. But whatever. It was also interesting last night, Casey Johnson reporting that Zach LaVine probably wanted to play in that game last night, wanted to give it a go, and the Bulls were the ones that told him to sit down, which will lead this Bulls fan to say, well, this is a situation where they're trying to protect. If Zach plays last night, do you think they win the game?
Yes.
Okay. Well, maybe the Bulls don't exactly want to win every game like they're telling us. And then now they're, you know, it's a long season. They've got 4 games this week, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, they're a very hard team to figure out. When you get 60 points from Vooch, Io, and Kobe, you think you're going to win. Mm-hmm. But you can't give up 130-something. Give me a break.
Yeah. This is a difficult one for me because I think they're going to try to trade Zach LaVine, and clearly they shouldn't because they're not going to win a game without him. I mean, they were doing pretty well. Weren't we impressed with the 3-2 start? And now they themselves look hapless and hopeless, frankly, without him. And they have lost to two pretty bad games. I mean, the Nets are supposed to be awful, and everyone knows it. And these guys are supposed to be better, the Jazz, but they were winless, and you give them their first win. So I think that means that Zach is important, and I don't know that everyone wants him to be, because I don't know if but you're right, David. I think it's a real mystery as to what they're really going to do. What do we call it if we don't call it Billy Ball? I mean, that is confusing. Donovan Disk? I mean, what? I don't even know what it would be. Is it because his name is William?
Donovan Ball, because there is no D?
Oh, boy, that's pretty good. But that would just probably not be as happy for
There's
him.
There's no I in team, so he doesn't like the Billy part.
I don't know.
Different question on a different topic.
Mike Florio, he'll be here 8:44 talking about the NFL trade deadline today at 3 hour time after winning 2 straight games in SoCal, including a surprising 4-3 shootout in Saturday against those Kings late afternoon game. The Blackhawks are on a roll, but still prone to inconsistency. What stood out to you?
You know, I think that the fact that they won is what stood out to me. You know, they need to win games. I frankly have been a little bit disappointed that they weren't better. I thought they were going to be better, and then they didn't come out of the season very sharp. And then you get a couple of wins in a row, and they, you know, it's good. It's just good. The idea that Connor Bedard is also learning how to win. He's on a winning team. He's not just, you know, out there as a potential superstar, future superstar, but suffering all these growing pains. And, you know, the idea is they got all these young guys and they're going to bring them along slowly. And I think that's good. I like that idea. I like that you've improved the team a little bit. And in his second year, you're going to be significantly more competitive and hopefully be adding players to that mix as you go along. I felt
you know, watched them, got to go see them a few times, including in Montreal, his first game in Canada, David. I don't know if you mentioned that.
Before.
I probably haven't told you about it. But it was just, it was really fun to watch that kid and to know how good he's going to be. But you wanted the team to do well. You wanted to feel like he was doing something other than putting on a show for the people in a loss. And so I'm glad that they've won games, and that's my big takeaway. They're playing better defense, but they've won, and that's huge.
Winning two games in a row and Connor Bedard having three assists on Sunday against the Ducks, that sticks out to me.
The kid's got three goals, but nine assists, 12 points in 13 games, yeah. And people are talking about how he's not scoring as much or he can't find the back of the net. Fair. Because I think he's hard on himself. You saw him snap a stick in frustration. But he's doing everything that he can. And this is a better team, improving team around him. Ryan Donato, I don't know how long he's going to continue on this heater he's on, but he has been a revelation. You look at Arvid Soderblom, the backup goalie, had a big day on Sunday. They went back-to-back in California, and they come home with 3-2 road trip. Tavo got the message. He was demoted, and he responded. So this is a team, I think, that you're seeing evidence of coaching. Luke Richardson can coach a little bit. He's not afraid to call guys out. He's not afraid to demote veterans. This guy is a hockey lifer, and he coaches this team like somebody who knows what they're doing. Hawks are fun to watch. Wednesday night, they get the chance to do something they didn't do last year, win three in a row. Wednesday night, Patrick Kane back at the UC.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
How surprising is it that Indiana is ranked number 8 in the latest AP poll? And this is college football, folks. Two spots ahead of Notre Dame. Are you excited to see the first college football playoff selection committee playoff rankings tonight at 6 on the 4-letter network? And what is the greatest question in your mind that will be answered tonight?
Love this question, even though it doesn't pay a ton of respect to Indiana football, but they haven't really earned it because this is some kind of season they're putting together. Cignetti is a candidate for National Coach of the Year. We'll find out tonight just how much the committee values or how everyone values the two-loss, soon to be maybe three-loss teams in the SEC or other conferences.
Right.
How do they value and respect depth versus flukiness, which you can say Indiana maybe a little fluky. Didn't expect these things. So how do they measure and weigh the expected depth in power conferences versus the unexpected teams on kind of lightning in a bottle seasons?
Well, I think it's a great story. And they've got Michigan this week at home. And then circle the calendar, November the 23rd, they are at number 3, the Ohio State. But as far as what question will be answered tonight, probably no questions other than the one maybe, I hope it's addressed, Mully, what you brought up, which is that potential elimination game this weekend between Alabama and LSU. The other thing, and I'm sure they'll do it, but if not, if they want a little suggestion from this producer of sports, I want a bracket tonight, right? I want to see that bracket. I want to see how they're laying it out, the teams that get the bye, who's playing who, and then if you're able to win that game, how, you know, it. The first one I saw Alabama playing Notre Dame.
Wow.
And then, you know, who do they play next? Like, who, you know, and is that game at Alabama, right? Because is the higher seeded team host? Yeah, I need to be reminded of how this whole thing works, but I'm thrilled it's 12 teams and I'm looking forward to it. Don't know that I'll watch it live, but I'll fire up the DVR.
Yeah, I think that Indiana will figure out before it's all said and done because of that Ohio State game. That gives them like kind of the one marquee chance to make their season. I don't know if they lose that game and they lose it badly, that they're going to have much of a chance that they'll be in the college playoff. And maybe that's wrong, but I'm just saying when your schedule is like that, and you could argue Penn State has a similar type of problem as we mentioned earlier. I think what's really interesting to me is to see how they set it up with the conferences. Because there are some power conferences that are in charge of college football, and there are these smaller schools, and some of them that are not really held in the same esteem. So, how do you set it up? I think the top
of this college football selection committee picks, we know what they are. I think they will follow what's going on in the national polls. But I'm very curious about how the rest of it works out. And frankly, another one is Notre Dame. Like, you know, Notre Dame, it's an argument school. Every year we have an argument about how they fit in and what they have to do and where do they fit. And we'll find out they are number one. What do you think?
One loss.
One loss Notre Dame, but a bad loss. But where do you set them up now to see how they would move up if they do win out? Or I think that's what I'm talking about. Is if you've got all of these kind of SEC, Big Ten schools in the final like 12 to 15, right? That means you're setting up for a loss and you're out. If one of these teams ends up in the top, if a two-loss SEC team ends up like 10, 11, that tells you they're going to get in with three losses.
Yep.
I'm just saying, I think we're going to be reading this sort of thing out of the first poll. I love that they've expanded it. I think it's going to be fun.
It will be fun.
All right. We've got the extra point next. We're going to get to it, right to it. Mully and Hall.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Midway through this Bears season, is Caleb Williams still on path to be the Bears' best quarterback ever? How much faith do you have in him? Has it been challenged?
I still believe in Caleb Williams. I do think he's the quarterback the Bears are going to eventually win because of. I still think that all that was said about him on draft night and throughout the summer, all those things to me remain true because we've seen evidence of that talent. It's also fair and necessary to point out the last 2 weeks have been a regression. He's taken a step backward, and it isn't linear. Matt Eberflus is right about that. What's frustrating is that when you look at Jaden Daniels, he hasn't had those steps back yet. That team is thriving because of him and with him. You look at the quarterback coming in this weekend, Drake May has been injured, but it's also a guy that has a higher passer rating, believe it or not, than Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams' passer rating is 83. That's 25th in the league. That's not acceptable. He knows it. We know it. Everybody knows it. This is in the territory of Daniel Jones, who's 82.9, who's been all but forgotten in New York. It's just below Dak Prescott, who's injured and overpaid in Dallas. This is not where you want to be if you're Caleb Williams. I don't think he'll be there for long. He's a quick learner. He's got immense skill, and he's got supreme confidence. I still believe in Caleb Williams. I understand why people would doubt him, but I think that you got to give him some help. Biggest problem on the Bears is not Caleb Williams. The biggest problem on the Bears are the people protecting Caleb Williams, calling plays for Caleb Williams. And to me, the priority list, when you start to rank him, he's probably third or fourth on my list of concerns.
It's very hard to judge completely at this point, because this offensive line was a problem going in. It continues to be a problem. And we might see the biggest patchwork offensive line in the history that I can remember of the Bears this week. I mean, it could be really weird. I mean, this is going to be a topic, at least in my opinion, all week long, is who are the five guys that are going to protect him? And how crazy might this get? Now there's been a couple of wow moments. He has that escapability, and he's had to use it way too much. He's able to throw that sidearm kind of shortstop baseball throw, and it's made me jump off the couch and say wow and rewind it live on TV. But there's also been the overthrows. Sometimes his body language is not great. He's taken some hits that you'd like to see him avoid. So it's incomplete right now, and it's not all his fault, but he's also not free of putting a little bit of a doubt in this Bears fan's mind.
Well, I think the problem is, and it's a problem, you know, you looked at the Bears and you looked at their defense, and you thought, as you did when they went out and got Cutler, you thought, wow, like they're a quarterback away. And then you bring a quarterback in, and you, by the way, built up the wide receiving core. And then you thought, wow, why didn't they ever fix the offensive line? So as I sit here contemplating this question, it is virtually impossible to judge whether the pressure he's getting is because of something to do with him and rookie quarterbacks and not seeing things on the field, or whether the very fact that he just got sacked six times. You know, they left him in a game. He got sacked three times. It makes me kind of crazy to think that they never kind of got to this fixing of the offensive line thing. And to be honest with you, I think that when I look at this and I contemplate how he has regressed over the last 2 weeks, well, the line has been patchwork. And now, as Dustin says, they've run out of offensive tackles. What's that going to look like? What's it going to look like with no Darnell Wright and no Braxton Jones? And it's not like either of those guys. I mean, I think Wright's probably their best offensive lineman, because when they need a yard, they can run behind him. But it's not like either of those guys are killing it. It's not like they're losing a Pro Bowl player. But there is a drop-off. And when guys haven't played together, I don't know what to expect. I, honest to God, do not know what we're going to look at. And when I even kind of go through it in my head, well, now you're going to have to move Pryor. Now you're going to have – I still don't think I come away with a satisfactory
conclusion. You don't feel good.
No.
You don't feel safe. You don't feel secure.
And I don't think he does either. And I don't think he should.
And I don't think – the worry is that he's developing bad habits in terms of processing information.
Exactly.
That's the biggest danger when you don't protect a quarterback, especially a young one, is that things are going to become – second nature, and the muscle memory is going to be skittish.
More often than not, quarterbacks are damaged in the NFL as opposed to developed. I mean, I hate to say that.
Especially now.
But there's a lot of that going
on. As the rush to the field continues, so many guys are there before they're ready.
And, you know, we saw a guy last night, Baker Mayfield, who managed to turn his career around, have a pretty good career after being a number one overall pick. You know, you look at Sam Darnold and the way that he's having kind of this
great example
revival. But, you know, they're on different teams, man. So the Bears need to figure out how to make things better for Caleb here in Chicago.
Can't wait to see how Bryce Young handles the Tennessee Titans in 2027.
Wow, that's awesome. All right, we got a lot to get to. We're going to get to your phone calls, 312-644-6767. We got Big Z at 7. We've got Coach Wonstadt today. We're going to be able to talk to Will Venable, the White Sox manager, before we get out of here. Really looking forward to that as well. Mully and Haw on the score.
No, and we're looking to find answers, and that's where we're at. Collectively as a group, offense and defense, and we're going through that process here today, tomorrow, and then implement that plan on Wednesday.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That's Matt Eberflus. That is him telling you that they're not making any changes in the coaching staff. They're looking for answers. They're looking at Shane Waldron to be the guy that provides them.
Every week is a season unto itself. And
he's right.
Flusie says it all the time, and it's true.
Yep.
And my sense, and I think you probably agree, the Bears are looking at this as a get-well week. And if they can somehow find a way to cling to the status quo, eke out a victory, return to some sort of offensive identity that's rooted in a running game and power football,
yeah,
then they'll feel good about being 5-4 going into the teeth of their schedule.
Listen, they better be looking at it like that.
They have
this
to.
If the season ended today, which I don't believe that's allowed, the New England Patriots would have the number one pick in the draft.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
That's how bad they are.
That's my point.
They're the worst team in football.
They're the worst team in football.
So you need to lean into that.
Beat the hell out of them.
As an organization. Look, yeah. Now, I think two things can be – I know I can do this with you. We do this a lot because there's one way we want to look at things,
yes,
like, oh, this is what I would do and this is – but there's a way that the Bears are looking at this.
Yes.
And this is a week where they're leaning into returning to the basics, I think, establishing an identity, getting their defense back on track, and feeling good about themselves and trying to take advantage of this last break in the schedule. It won't get any easier than Sunday.
This is a get-well game. This is the last game, the last one, really, before you begin a difficult stretch of games. This is the easiest opponent, and you are back home.
You're home.
And guess what? You're not going to play on the road on a Sunday until, when is it? Like end of November.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long time.
Long time.
Your next away game is Detroit on Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's a fun one.
So, well, you'll particularly enjoy it. But that's not a fun one. But that's your next away game. Yeah, so you get a little stay of execution here if that 0-18 thing bothers you a little bit.
You
got to win
you
at home. Period.
You have to win at home.
And you got to beat bad teams.
I'd be more open if I were Matt Eberflus to changing play callers. I would want to maybe do some things differently. Those are things that are worth debating. What isn't, I think, worth debating is that, okay, they're not going to fire their coach this week. They're not going to make that decision probably in season. We'll go one week at a time. But this isn't the week they're going to do that, no matter how much conversation there will be about it. He's going to stick to the status quo stubbornly. I think it's stubborn.
Yes.
But I understand it,
yes,
because you don't want to be that coach that is looking for his third offensive coordinator. Because the minute – you said it yesterday, and it's a product of being around a lot of NFL teams. When you fire the offensive coordinator as a head coach – you put yourself on the clock, and it ticks a little louder.
That's right. That's exactly right. Let's try Mo. Mo's on the Odyssey app. Hey, Mo.
Hey, good morning, fellas. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. Started off, just want to say, you guys bring such a fun content every single morning, working as a triage nurse, and it's right before my shift. Just love listening to your show. Wanted to talk to you guys about leadership. It's such a sacred role. I mean, a person who brings you hope during tough times and keeps you even keeled when you're successful, right?
Yep.
The Bears have always tried to invent the wheel by hiring these coaches without any previous head coaching background except for Patty Driscoll and then most recently John Fox, who was near the end of his retirement.
Right.
You know, that Detroit Lions offensive coordinator, yeah, he's a really good OC, but we don't know if he's going to be a really good head coach.
It's a very good point.
What do you guys think about a guy like Mike Vrabel?
Thanks, Mo. Yeah, he's out there. You could talk to him. Well, you can't talk to him now. He's in Cleveland.
If the job becomes open, he would be a guy that would be near the top of my list.
All right. 312-644-6767. Brad Biggs next on The Score.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen.
Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas. This is sports the way it should be.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.